May it please the court. The venue question presented in this appeal is whether Jesus Rosales was a resident of Hidalgo County on November 1st, 2022. Section 15.002A2 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code requires looking to a defendant's residence on the date the cause of action accrued if a venue is to be placed based on the place of his residence. Here, the relevant date is November.
What do they say? And I looked at it again this morning. Does it say resides, lives? What does the venue statute mandate that the defendant live? Is that the word it uses, correct?
I believe the venue statute uses the word residence. And fortunately, I have my venue statute handy. And it is in the county of the defendant's residence at the time the cause of action accrued if the defendant is a natural person.
Okay.
And I assure you that Rosales is a natural person.
Yes. Well, all I don't right. think we'll all... No. Yeah. Hopefully we won't disagree about this morning.
Yeah. So the only evidence of Rosales' residence on that date consisted of the affidavits of Rosales and his wife, Lisa, who married in October 2022. 6 months earlier, Rosales moved into Lisa's Strader Road home in Cameron County and continued to live there through the accident date. He was no longer a resident of Hidalgo County after the move, and he explained that he had moved from the Bryce Road address that appeared on the crash report before the accident.
Now, my understanding, though, is that the driver's license still had Brycewood. That's where the information came from the police report.
That's correct. And
okay. So he has a driver's license that has Bryce Road on it.
Right, but then you have to ask the question, okay, what is the character of a driver's license address when trying to prove residence? Keeping in mind
that... Well, when I vote, it's a critical piece of evidence as to where I reside, which sets out when I have to show my driver's license when I vote. So here's my question, Mr. Miller. Can we have two residents?
You can have two residences, yes.
Okay.
But if a plaintiff's going to rely on a second residence argument, you got to have sufficient proof viewed in the totality of the record of two residences. And with a driver's license, that is weak proof unless you show the driver's license was issued sometime near the accident date, because a driver's license in Texas can be almost 9 years old in some situations. When you apply for or renew a license and get it, that license will expire 8 years after your next birthday. So that's 8 years plus on how old that driver's license could be.
So I want to ask you a question, and it's hype. I'm going to ask you two issues. One, the issue of residence and lives gets very intertwined in these briefs and gave me some concern as to what we're looking at. Because, for example, my son, who residence on his driver's license is my home, but I promise you he lives with his girlfriend and they don't live in my house. So I'm in my head trying to figure out what the definitions of what needs to be shown in venue. All right? So just, and then I wanted to take a step backward. What I was trying to figure out this morning, Mr. Miller, was in what lens are we supposed to look at this under the standard of review at this date? Because then I'm going, okay, wait. What am I looking at, you know, in front of the trial court, but what am I looking at as far as the standard of review as we sit here today? Because this is an interlocutory appeal.
Right. The first thing, let me talk about standard review.
Okay, please.
The Supreme Court already construed the relevant clause about independent determination from the record in the Surgitech case in 1999. And the record means the entire record, just like it does for a post-trial appeal under 15.064. So we have to look at both sides' evidence. Now, the more difficult question...
Are we looking at it almost like a de novo review then? Are we looking at all the facts that the trial court had in front of it to determine venue?
You have to do that under Surgitech because the Supreme Court has interpreted the statute's reference to the record as meaning the entire record.
Okay.
And in fact, I think the language used in Surgitech was de novo review from the entire record.
All right.
The more difficult standard review question is, what do we do with this language about independent determination and about without relying on a abuse of discretion or substantial evidence standard of review. And that suggests that legal sufficiency of the evidence on the plaintiff's part isn't enough, that this court is empowered to look at the entirety of the record and say, this record clearly preponderates the other way, and the trial court got it wrong. That's not asking too much of an appellate court, because when you're looking at affidavits, when you're looking at deposition testimony, there's no advantage that the trial court has over the appellate court, even if there's a credibility determination to be made from that evidence, because you're looking at the same thing.
Okay. So when we're looking at the independent determination, we have to look at it in certain steps. Did the plaintiff plead sufficient facts for their venue? Isn't that the first step we have to do as an independent determination? And if we find so by the pleadings, and we find that the facts stated in the pleadings are true, that stops one step of our analysis.
Right. The pleading plus the specific denial means now it's an evidentiary matter.
Right.
And then we look at the evidence presented. In this case, both sides presented evidence. We look at the evidence presented by both sides, look at the entire record. We don't credit.
So what do we do with evidence that is disputed?
Well, yeah, first of all, you have to look at it in terms of the entire record, because, you know, even a driver's license issued a month before an accident date, if that's rebutted by evidence from the defendant that I got evicted from my apartment, right, and I had to move in with my parents, well, guess what? That former address is no longer a residence.
Okay.
You've got, when you look in at the totality of the record, you've got evidence that contradicts, and in that case really conclusively contradicts, what is shown on the driver's license.
Okay.
And, you know, we have to keep in mind too that those driver's licenses, the legislature imposed a very modest penalty for not updating a driver's license's address. $500 for a commercial driver, $200 for a non-commercial driver, reducible to a $20 reinstatement fee. There's nothing in the transportation code that suggests that the legislature intended any other consequences of failing to update a driver's license. There's nothing in the venue statute that suggests that we should be drawing a presumption from a driver's license address. The legislature.
But in this case, would it have made a difference had the accident occurred within, is it 180 days? To change your license from when you move?
Oh, I think it may be as little as 30 days.
Okay, just 30 days. Would it have mattered if it happened within 30 days? Like the address is still Hidalgo County, but I still had an opportunity under the law.
I think that the closer you get to the accident date, the stronger an inference you have, and then you have to look at the totality of the evidence in the record, and keep in mind things like the equal inference rule to say, can I draw the inference from this driver's license address that more likely than not, this individual still resided there? Because if other inferences are available from the record that are contradictory, and no inference is more likely than the others, or the other inferences are more likely, then you have no evidence.
And that's my point. Is an address on a driver's license definitive as to where someone resides?
I don't think it's ever definitive. I mean, I could imagine a college student, sometimes parents move right after the kid graduates high school. So, you know, what's the kid gonna put on the driver's license for an address? You could put the dormitory, but you may be in a different dormitory the following year. You could use your parents' new address, but maybe you don't like Pittsburgh, and maybe you don't want to rejoin your parents who moved to Pittsburgh after you lived in Texas your whole life. There's situations where that driver's license is just a matter of convenience, the address on it, that is, as opposed to a matter of actual residence. And that kind of reminds me of the Graham case, where you had a woman who used a family's office building as her mailing address for bills, bank accounts, driver's license. And the Austin Court of Appeals said, look, you know, in the totality of the evidence in this record regarding where this individual had her personal belongings, entertained friends, spent the night, she wasn't a resident of Tom Green County. She was a resident of Travis County. So, you know, that's another example that, you know, we just can't give dispositive weight to the driver's license.
But you're asking us to give dispositive weight to your affidavit of Mr. Rosales.
Yes, because there's nothing that contradicts it, and it is more than mere conclusions. He states when he moved to Cameron County. He states why he moved to Cameron County, which is a fairly typical reason. He met someone, got engaged to her, married her. There's nothing controverting any of that. So we have their testimony of Rosales and his wife regarding events in 2022 versus a voter registration from more than a year earlier. We have the driver's license address, but we don't have a date of the driver's license because we don't have even the driver's license itself in the record. We got deeds from 2019. There's a second deed from 2022 where he disposed of the property 10 days after the accident, but nothing in that deed saying that he actually used that as a residence. I mean, you know, any investor
what,
who...
What means, I mean, let's assume, you know, he has a driver's license, he has a voter registration, and he's voted in Hidalgo County for the last 2 years, or in the last election. Doesn't that, when you vote, establish that you're a resident of that county? Isn't that what voter registration is all about? Isn't that evidence of residence in Hidalgo County?
At the time that you voted, yes. But, again, it has to be viewed in the totality of the record. And you might have a situation like in Graham where the voter registration was in Tom Green County.
Right.
That, you know, you look at the totality of the evidence and say, you know what, you really didn't vote. I mean, you really didn't reside in Tom Green County. The Graham case cites the case Texas versus Florida from the U.S. Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court of the United States treated a voter registration as effectively no evidence of someone's domicile in Texas. We have to look beyond what is said on government documents to what the facts of actual residence are. Where do you spend your nights? Where is your immediate family?
What other evidence is on the record besides the affidavit and the driver's license?
Okay, so we have this a TLOXP report from Credit Bureau TransUnion, one of our favorites. And that's problematic because there's no opinions relying on such a consumer data report to establish residency for the purposes of venue. We have the report's unsworn in this case. We have nobody saying that what's contained in this report is true. And oftentimes these data collections are not true. We noted that there were some obvious errors in this one because they reported the Interstate 2 address, I think, 2 years after the 2019 deed. They said, oh, we linked the guy to the address in 2021. Well, it's on the 2019 deed. On top of that, I'm trying to remember where there was a third thing here. The TLOXP report doesn't even identify any of the listed addresses as a residence, which is also problematic. So, you know, it kind of creates this dystopian potential here where, you know, the credit bureaus determine where we reside and where we get sued, or maybe even where we have the right to vote, based on their data collection. And, you know, in the case of venue, if what the plaintiffs were saying is right, if that's some evidence of venue, then there's nothing we can do to contest it. I'd hate to think that someone could pull up my records and see that I have an office address in Corpus Christi and used to own a condo in Corpus Christi and say, oh, you must be a resident of Nueces County, even though I've been spending all my nights in San Patricio County for well over a decade.
Well, Mr. Miller, I've got the Graham case in front of me, but we could not locate a Texas, a 13th Court of Appeals case on this issue. Am I correct? Did we miss one? At least I was looking for in one of your briefs. And couldn't find one.
I don't think that there is one, but that Graham case is pretty persuasive and highlights a lot of the problems that you can face when you rely on what is stated on a driver's license or voter registration, and don't look at the totality of the record, which the Surgitech standard of review for section 15.003 cases requires.
Thank you, Mr. Riley.
Judge, can I approach? I have some demonstrative aids I'd like to provide the court.
You may. I'm assuming this is all things that are in the record, Mr. Or is this just for your argument this morning?
A little bit of the argument, yes.
Okay.
There's one document from the record.
The affidavit.
Yes, sir. Oh, my time's already started.
You better talk fast, Mr. Romero.
All right. May it please the court. Degato Pombadolo here for the appellees, and I'm joined by trial counsel for appellees, Michael Flanagan. In my mind, the only path to success that appellants have to prevail in this appeal is if the court loses sight of the parties' respective evidentiary burdens and gets confused as to what they are. And so that is why I prepared this first demonstrative aid. It says levels of venue evidence. All right. What you need to consider is a floor to ceiling type evidentiary, spectrum. At the very floor of evidence is prima facie proof. And prima facie proof represents the minimum quantity of evidence necessary to support a rational inference that the allegation of fact is true. So in other words, all I need to do is present the minimum amount of evidence necessary so that one can logically conclude upon seeing that evidence, it's quite possible Mr. Rosales resides in Hidalgo County. It's the minimum amount. I don't have to prove definitively, like it's impossible to disprove it. It's the floor, it's not the ceiling. The people who are at the ceiling are the defendants, the appellants. They're at the ceiling of the evidence. They're at the highest point possible, okay? What they have to do is they have to come here with conclusive proof that Mr. Rosales did not reside in Hidalgo County at the time of the accident. It's not enough for them to come here with preponderance of the evidence, which I believe I heard counsel say in his argument. That's not gonna cut it. It's not enough to come here with controverting evidence. It needs to be conclusive. If it's just controverting a little bit, but you still leave some wiggle room, the appellees win here. And you go ahead and you affirm the trial court's ruling. And it's worth
looking. I think I've read somewhere where they need to destroy your evidence.
Yes, they need to destroy it.
I think that's what the briefs that both said, which is why I was trying to figure out the review of the case so that I feel like, okay, you've got a prima facie case, his driver's license, that is his voter registration. He does own property in Hidalgo County. I don't think that's been disproved. None of the venue facts that you've stated have disproved. They're trying to disprove that he lives here.
Correct. They got to disprove it. And the city of Keller here versus Wilson that's cited here, that provides an excellent definition from the Supreme Court as to what exactly is conclusive evidence. Says conclusive evidence can be viewed in only one light, and reasonable jurors can reach only one conclusion from it. And if you drop down at the bottom there, it says there are few instances in which disputed evidence is conclusive, and that's where we're at right now. This is disputed. And the question is this really one of those few instances in which you can have conclusive evidence? And I'm gonna submit to the court that this is not the case, not this one.
You don't think what they say in their brief, which is, and what they said at the hearing was, the affidavit destroys it because Mr. Rosales admits on a sworn affidavit that he doesn't live in Hidalgo County. No, we all have the affidavit in front of us.
Yeah, so he did not swear to that. Okay. And so, you know what, I'm going to call it audible here. Now, typically, I would go ahead and I would start with my own evidence and, say it's prima facie, but you know what, I cannot, if we're not going to prevail here, it's not because of, a finding that we did not present the bare minimum. It's going to be a finding that you found that this was conclusive evidence and it destroyed. So I just want to jump to that. And so what I need you to do, though, if we're going to go there, is go ahead and assume right now, for the sake of argument, that I have met my prima facie burden.
Okay.
And that prima facie burden consisted of two things for us.
Okay, with both of you.
Okay. Right. That prima facie burden consisted of two things. We were out to prove two residences for Mr. Rosales in Hidalgo County. They have been referred to in our briefing as the Bryce property, I believe, right, and the Lot 166 property. So that's how I'm going to refer to them here. Okay. So there are, before I get into these affidavits, there's three points of law that need to be in the back of your head while you're considering these affidavits. First point of law, A person can have more than one residence in the state of Texas. Undisputed, everyone gets that. All right.
I've had it for 10 years.
There you go. A second point of law is that a person can be said to have a residence at an abode, even if that abode is used intermittently and for short durations of time. All right? For that proposition, you should look at the Supreme Court's recent opinion this past March in Fortin Berry versus Great Divide Insurance Company. It is discussed in our brief. In that case, they go through some 70-something years of Texas jurisprudence where they say it is quite easy to establish a residence. It's not someplace you have to stay every day. It could be 3 days every 2 months. That suffices. Third thing you have to know and consider the evidence here.
So are you saying that if say I have a vacation home, then for the purposes of venue, you're going to use a vacation home as a residence?
Absolutely. You could do that in Texas. The third point of law that you need to have in the back of your mind when you're looking at these affidavits is that you need to construe the evidentiary record in the light most favorable to the trial court's ruling. Now, counsel for 3HM, Mr. Winkler, I believe, argued in his reply brief that I was wrong on that point of law. Respectfully, he is wrong. I'm going to provide you a case citation that was out of my briefs because I wasn't expecting, anticipating this in his reply, but it's a case out of Austin, 2014. It's Hughes versus Piercy. It's a 2014 Westlaw 701-4353. And I just want to quote it one sentence real quick. We review the evidentiary record in the light most favorable to the venue ruling, but review de novo the trial court's application of the law to the facts of the case. There's more opinions out there just like this one. So it's both. You defer to the trial court's ruling. You read the you look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the trial court's ruling. But de novo comes to the application of the law to the facts. All right. If you could go to the second page that I provided in my demonstrative aid. This is Rosales' wife's affidavit. We're going to get through this one pretty quickly because there's not a whole lot there. You look at the first paragraph. That's just boilerplate affidavit wordage. The second paragraph, I married Jesus Rosales on October 10th. That in no way obviously refutes venue in Hidalgo County. So you could flip the page to the other side. Let's go to paragraph 3. I live in La Feria, Texas, which is located in Cameron County. Again, doesn't do anything to refute. And to go to the last paragraph, Jesus Maria Rosales began living with me at my residence in La Feria, Texas, approximately 6 months prior to October 10, 2022 wedding. So he was living in Cameron County, Texas on the date the subject accident occurred. This proves nothing. You could have two or more residences at the same time in Texas. Just because he is said to live there doesn't mean that he wasn't also during that time spending 2-3 days, we don't know, in Hidalgo County. And it's not my burden to show that. They have to present conclusive evidence destroying anything, any kind of inkling, inclination that you might have that residency in Hidalgo County is possible. They didn't do that through that fourth paragraph right there. So this affidavit achieves nothing. That leaves them with only Rosales' affidavit, and that's going to be on the next page. So I do not believe that Rosales' affidavit constitutes conclusive evidence, but I don't want to just say that to the court and not explain to the court and provide an example of what I think does constitute conclusive evidence if they had presented it. So what I've done here is I created my own affidavit that I think conclusively potentially could have destroyed any kind of probative evidence of venue in Hidalgo County. And on the other column, I have Rosales' actual affidavit. And what I want to do for purposes of examining Rosales' affidavit is I want to go through my mock affidavit and juxtapose it. All right? So let's go. You could ignore the first paragraphs. That's just affidavit stuff. So let's go with my paragraph number 2. At the time of the subject incident, I did not have access to or possession of the Bryce property or the Lot 166 property. All right, first of all, there's nothing in Rosales' affidavit that says anything about the Lot 166 property. It's all focused on the Bryce property, all right? So now let's see whether or not
Can I ask you a question? Absolutely. While we're listening, and we're looking at 2, the police report of the subject accident erroneously listed my address. And what caught me in Rosales' affidavit is why that was erroneous if that was on his, I mean, he owns the property, or is in possession of 1202 Rice at the time of the accident. Is he not, Mr. Rosales? He has that property.
That is not clear from the record.
Okay, well, that's what I've been trying to get at. I'm not clear from the record. And there was some thought somewhere in someone's brief, and I cannot remember, that he actually also gave that address to the police officer. It wasn't just listed.
He gave the lot 166 property address to the officer.
So he gave different. Okay, that's where my confusion was. Okay. I thought it was only one property. I don't know why. I apologize.
Let me ask you this, because you say that you believe you've provided the bare minimum of where he resides.
Absolutely.
And do you agree with the definition of where you reside is someplace that you normally go spend the night? It's not just a place you own, but it's a place you might go and spend time. You mentioned earlier that, right, if I had a vacation home, just I went for a couple of days.
Right.
So I looked at the different things you say prove that, and one is a driver's license, the accident report, a credit report, and that he was registered to vote. What, if anything, do any of those prove about where he stays every night, or some nights, or resides?
I don't need to prove that. I have the bare minimum amount of evidence that I need to present. And under the law, and that I'm going to go back then to my initial prima facie proof here, the address on a driver's license under Texas law, Texas Transportation Code 521.121 says a driver's license must include a residential address, okay? It says it must be updated every 30 days. Now, I mean, he wants to say, well, you know, you could be evicted. You could do this, you could do that. Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. I need to present the bare minimum to allow someone to make an inference. Look, if you were meeting me for the first time, I'm a stranger to you, and we're playing a game here. Hey, you got 2 minutes and 5 minutes to figure out where I'm from. I'm not gonna tell you myself. What kind of information would you want from me? Probably a driver's license. That would help. You would probably make a conclusion based on that as to where I live, and that's fair. You'd probably also, rely on voter registration.
But that wouldn't work in this case, would it?
Why not?
Well, yeah. You said that because the plaintiff or the defendant in this case claims he lives somewhere else, but he has a driver's license that says something else. So by giving him a license, it wouldn't be definitive as to where he lives.
No, I disagree.
That goes back to where are we when we are looking at the evidence. If we start our step at the plaintiff gets to pick the venue, that's all. Again, law school 101. And when they write in their pleading that the defendant lives at whatever address, they only need to prove that by prima facie evidence.
Correct.
Am I correct? Right? So when we're looking at it and reviewing it, we look at the pleadings. And the whole order is there evidence that substantiated your pleadings? And then when we have to then go, did the defendant, whoever wants to transfer the venue, whether it's plaintiff or defendant, because it actually could be either or, do they do that by destroying the evidence that was presented in prima facie evidence?
Correct.
All right? So that's why I'm trying to ascertain, and that's where we get into this, what Mr. Miller called the independent determination. So when we're looking at it, are we then looking at everything? And I think that's where it goes to justice hitting. So what do I hold at a higher esteem? Or at a higher level? The driver's license or his affidavit that says, I think a driver's license is evidence that you live somewhere, you've signed documents, you whatever you do to get a driver's license, and then you have an affidavit that says he doesn't.
Right.
That he's got an illegal driver's license, basically.
Sure. So.
And he's a truck driver. I don't want to take away from the thing that Mr. Right. Rosales is a truck driver with a commercial driver's license.
Right. Though I do believe the driver's license that was in the police report was
just a regular, wasn't in commercial.
So. But I mean, I see my time here.
Go ahead, you're fine.
Look at my paragraph number 2. All right. At the time of the subject incident, I did not have access to or possession of Bryce property. There was nothing in Rosales's affidavit that commands a person who's reading it to find that Rosales, at the time of the accident, did not have access to or possession of the Bryce property. There's nothing there. The best that they could hope for is their numbered paragraph number 3, where it says, the Bryce property is a very old address for me. I have not lived there in some time. All right? That is vague. What they want you to do is they want you to read that and assume that by saying that's a very old address, that infer that you're supposed to infer relinquishment of the property. That's not necessarily the case. For example, if someone's going to email me and they say, hey, can I send something to you to your Hotmail email address? I say, no, that's a very old email address for me. Go ahead and shoot me something at my Outlook instead. By saying that, I'm not saying that I have lost all access to my Hotmail address. I still have it. I still have possession of it. But I have something else that I prefer instead. It's my more primary email address. Same type of scenario here. Let's say, hypothetically, you have a man and a woman. Man lives in Houston, woman lives in Austin. They get married. Man moves to Houston, to Austin. All right. He leaves behind a residence that he still owns, that he still has stuff there. He might say, hey, my Houston address is an old address for me, haven't lived there in some time. That does not prevent anyone from coming to the possible conclusion that, hey, well, you know, you still have access to that piece of property. It's not your primary, it's not your preferred anymore, but you still own it. And for all we know, you still spend time there from time to time. So there is nothing in the Rosales' affidavit that prevents one from coming to the possibility that he had access and possession to the property at the time of the accident. Let's go to paragraph number 3. At the time of the subject incident, I had no personal belongings at the Bryce property or the Lot 166 property. We have no idea from their evidence. They have the burden to conclusively disprove residency in Dauphin County. We don't know one way or another from Rosales' affidavit whether or not at the time of the accident he had all his personal belongings still at the Bryce property or the Lot 166 property. Go to paragraph number 4. At the time of the subject incident, there were no active utility services under my name at the Bryce property or Lot 166 property. Is this addressed by Rosales' affidavit? Absolutely not. Let's go with number 5. For at least X consecutive days preceding the subject incident, I did not utilize the Bryce property or the Lot 166 property for any of my living needs. There is nothing in Rosales' affidavit that tells you, you know, for how long were you not using that property? All he does is he speaks in vague terms. He says, well, I haven't lived there in some time. What does that mean? You have a conclusive evidence you're supposed to destroy. Is it 2 weeks?
So are you saying that had the affidavit contained the information that you provided, and you believe that to be conclusive, then that would be enough to destroy your evidence?
I think it would be enough, yes, to destroy in Hidalgo County. However, I still think we would win because we have an alternative, a second argument that is, goes to was discussed in Fortenberry and was discussed in at length in our brief that there is case law that existed for over 100 years that says, look, when you have someone who is moving from one county to another county, sometimes their affairs are not in order and it can be difficult to know exactly where they are. And so in those situations, under Texas law, they can be sued in either county. And so this is
not- That also said something about uncertainty, right?
Yes, uncertainty. Yeah. And so, you know, the process of moving goes beyond just moving furniture. It is things like updating your driver's license. It is things like, you know, voter registration. There's all these things that are part of the process. And a great example is the Austin Court of Appeals case that we discuss, the Mazzi case, where in that case, it was conclusive evidence that the Mazzis had moved out of their Dallas home, had emptied out all their belongings, moved them to Travis County months before the applicable time for filing the lawsuit. And yet the Dallas Court of Appeals says, you know what? It's still confusing. It's still uncertain. The Mazzis, even though the evidence shows all their property was gone in Dallas, their home was pending on the market for 8 months, 9 months before suit was filed, they could still be sued there. All right, I got about 1 minute of time left. So look, I obviously don't have enough time to get into the evidence of, you know, the prima facie, but here's one thing that you need to know. You have not heard a single explanation in their briefing or in this oral argument as to what exactly do they feel is kind of the prima facie evidence that we needed to present here today to make just that minimum showing of residency in Dauphin County. He says, you know, it can't be a driver's license. It can't be voter registration. I think all those are wrongs, and those arguments are in my briefing. But you know what's amazing here is that Mr. Winkler, in his brief, he actually tries to give the court an indication of what constitutes prima facie proof for us. What do we need to get? And he says, we should have gotten an affidavit from Rosales' landlord. We should have tracked him down. We should have tracked a neighbor down. We should have obtained a leasing agreement. Really, that's the bare minimum proof that one has to meet? That sounds more like conclusive evidence. So there's a huge blurring of evidentiary burdens here. I'm just closing up right now. What you have to realize is that the appellants are raising the floor for the plaintiffs and they're lowering the ceiling, and the ceiling is coming crashing down. You can't tell where the floor ends and the ceiling begins. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
You may.
We've explained in our briefing what a prima facie case requires. You've got to show more than just a link between a defendant and an address, or even that the address was a past residence. You have to bring that to the present like the statute requires. You have to show residence on the date that the cause of action accrued. One thing they could have done to close that link was depose Mr. Rosales. After all, the rules of civil procedure allow that.
Neither of you had deposed Mr. Rosales.
Well, neither of our trial counsel made that choice.
I had this little thought in my head at one point. It's not taking time away from you about calling Mr. Rosales in here. We could question him, right? We could take care of this.
When you're talking about residents in Hidalgo County, the absence of proof does not inure in the plaintiff's favor because they're the ones that had the burden of producing evidence sufficient on that fact. And of course, that's when viewed in the totality of the evidence, which also addresses the question of the driver's license versus the affidavit. We have to look at the totality of the evidence and apply. You know, if it is legal sufficiency, we have to apply City of Keller versus Wilson what a reasonable juror would be able to say.
You don't fault them for filing in Hidalgo County when driver's license said it and the police report said it. Are you saying that they need to do more pre-suit to determine the address?
They could have done more pre-suit, but they also had another option, which was you can take a non-suit at any point until the motion to transfer venue is ruled upon and file in a different county. Sometimes we file suits and the facts don't turn out.
You can imagine the craziness that would go on, Mr. Miller, if this court decides that you cannot use a driver's license as proof of prima facie proof of residence. Of all the lawsuits that would then have to file motions to transfer venue to prove more. I mean, come on.
But again, you have to view it in the course of the totality of the evidence.
I agree. We're on a second step, but
right.
So arguing that the driver's license is not prima facie.
You have to have a starting point. You have to have a hunch about what you're going to be able to prove. I mean, a lot of people do use things like People Map to effectively make an educated guess about where somebody resides. But guess what? You know, maybe there's a junior-senior situation and you ended up filing suit where senior resides but not junior. That's happened a few times
and
before.
And I didn't mean to imply that they could have been wrong as well. And
right.
The natural process is a motion to transfer venue.
Yeah, we have lots of situations where we file suits or other pleadings and turn out to be proven to be wrong as to the facts. And you know, that's one of the reasons why we have discovery and don't adjudicate every case on the pleadings. So the plaintiffs want to rely a lot upon inferences, but again, if you're going to rely on inferences, the inferences have to be more likely in your favor than opposing and competing inferences. And there is a problem with stacking inferences. In math in high school, they teach you that a 70% probability stacked onto a 70% probability is only a 49% probability. Now it's less likely than not. It's less likely, you know, when you have that, even though 70% sounds like a good number in the abstract. And you can do that with all kinds of statistics. The more inferences you stack or the inclusion of a weak inference with a strong inference, you may not be able to get to that more likely than not standard that gets you past the equal inference rule. We do destroy the plaintiff's prima facie proof with our controverting evidence. We use that term too in our briefing, but we also ask, is that necessarily the standard considering what the legislature put into 15.003? And we do have to give meaning to the references to not using an abusive discretion standard or a substantial evidence standard both of which very much resemble legal sufficiency when resolving factual disputes. Under both of them, the question is, could a juror reasonably, or a fact finder reasonably, reach this conclusion, which is basically the test for legal sufficiency under a City of Keller versus Wilson. So, you know, there is an opportunity for the court to say something like, the trial court just, you know, there may have been some evidence, but the trial court clearly erred here because we feel the evidence, the preponderance of the evidence points definitely in another way. The sample affidavit is a bit of a straw man. Access, well, I got access to my office. Utilities, well, landlords provide utilities to vacant apartments. I don't think that there's much that can be built on there. They're trying to set a higher bar than we need for a controverting affidavit and ask for good addresses. I might give my office address as a good address depending on the circumstances. Like maybe I want to get the mail during the day as opposed to at night.
All right, before I submit this case for submission, I would like to let y'all know that yesterday the case 13-22-208-CV, Brian Michael Parks and Ads Air Conditioning, Inc. versus Nancy Magee, was heard by the other panel, which means not us three, and this issue was also the case on point. So just so you know, there are two cases coming out of a court. So I wanted, in case y'all did not know, this court knows what the right hand and the left hand are doing.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.